We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Away we go, episode 793 of the Al Galdi podcast. It is Thursday, March 28th, 2024, and so much for the plan for Capitals and Wizards home games to move to a new arena in the Potomac Yard area of Alexandria, Virginia, beginning with the team's 2028-2029 seasons. That plan came to an embarrassing end on Wednesday afternoon. So the plan was announced this past December 13th via separate press releases from Monumental Sports and Entertainment founder, chairman, principal partner, and CEO Ted Leonsis and Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin. But the plan over the last few months hit multiple snags, including Youngkin and the Virginia Senate not being on the same page. Also, we on February 11th had a public back and forth between Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and Monumental Sports and Entertainment, including Bowser in an op-ed for the Washington Post seemingly threatening legal action. Well, the mayor of the city of Alexandria, Virginia, Justin Wilson, he on Wednesday afternoon issued a statement that included the following, quote, "The city of Alexandria has ended negotiations related to the Potomac Yard Entertainment District opportunity, and the proposal will not move forward. As stewards of the city's economic health and development, city leaders believe the Potomac Yard Entertainment District opportunity was worthy of community discussion and council consideration. We negotiated a framework for this opportunity in good faith and participated in the process in Richmond in a way that preserved our integrity. We trusted the process and are disappointed in what occurred between the governor and General Assembly," end quote. You know, I on Wednesday's show, episode 792, said that I did not have much of an appetite to talk about this situation until we had a definitive conclusion with this situation. Well, we now have a definitive conclusion. But the best part of what happened with this situation on Wednesday was this. Ted Leonsis on Wednesday morning put out a series of posts on X raving about recent attendance success at Capital One Arena for the Capitals, the Wizards, and concerts. Ted Leonsis, who had been all set to leave Washington, D.C., he on Wednesday morning, seemingly out of nowhere, was heaping praise, was throwing bouquets at the city of Washington, D.C. Why was this? Where was this coming from? Well, we on Wednesday evening got an announcement from Ted Leonsis and Muriel Bowser of a deal by which Capitals and Wizards home games will remain at Capital One Arena until 2050. Now, the deal requires approval from the D.C. Council, but D.C., under the terms of the deal, would spend $515 million on Capital One Arena over 3 years. You wonder what this might mean for a potential new Commander Stadium in D.C. If D.C. is spending all this money on Cap 1, would D.C. have the money to help with the funding for a new Commander Stadium? Of course, it could be that D.C. doesn't have to pay for a new Commander Stadium in D.C. But getting away from the Commander Stadium situation, all of this drama, all of this back and forth, and the end result is that Ted Leonsis's Capitals and Wizards are staying at Capital One Arena. Hello and welcome to this Thursday installment of the Al Galdi podcast. Well, also on Thursday was a key occurrence in the pre-draft process for the Commanders, who, as you may have heard, have the number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft. We on Thursday had LSU's Pro Day. Among those in attendance, Commanders General Manager Adam Peters, Commanders Assistant General Manager Lance Newmark, Commanders Head Coach Dan Quinn, and Commanders Offensive Coordinator Cliff Kingsbury. LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels, who on March 2nd at the 2024 NFL Scouting Combine at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis declined to be measured, did in fact get measured at LSU's Pro Day. Height 6'3 and 5/8 of an inch. Weight 210 pounds. The weight was of utmost curiosity, given that he declined to get measured at the combine. But 210 pounds is what Jaden Daniels weighed in at. Look, there is a lot to like with Jaden Daniels, but there also with him are reasons for concern. The weight slash skinny nature is one concern. And I next segment am going to welcome on a terrific guest for a proper deep dive on perhaps the biggest concern with Jaden Daniels, pressure to sack rate. The guest, fantasy football writer Zachary Kruger of Roto World Football. We on this podcast have talked about pressure to sack rate, which is a Pro Football Focus stat. Pressure to sack rate has gained a lot of notoriety in recent months. Zachary Kruger has done some great work on the quarterbacks in the 2024 draft in terms of how those quarterbacks fare in pressure to sack rate. Zachary has great command, no pun intended, of pressure to sack rate, what it means, what it says, the various ways to use it, etc. And so we next segment are going to go in depth on pressure to sack rate and what it tells us about the three quarterbacks who would appear to be the top three candidates to be selected by the Commanders in the first round of the 2024 draft. Jaden Daniels, North Carolina quarterback Drake May, and Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy. You likely have heard about pressure to sack rate. Prepare to have a full comprehension of pressure to sack rate by the end of next segment, courtesy of Zachary Kruger. Also on the show, opening day. Yes, Thursday is opening day for Major League Baseball's 2024 regular season, even though technically MLB's 2024 regular season started last week with the Los Angeles Dodgers and San Diego Padres splitting a two-game series in South Korea. But you get the idea. Opening day, as we know it, is on Thursday. And so I later in the show will give you thoughts and predictions for the Nationals and Orioles in the 2024 regular season. And we'll react to the expected but still outstanding Orioles news on Wednesday. MLB owners on Wednesday unanimously approving the sale of the O's from the Angelos family to a group led by private equity billionaire David Rubenstein. And I late in the show will talk Wizards, who unfortunately did not commemorate the big news regarding Capital One Arena with a win. A 122-119 overtime loss to the Brooklyn Nets at Capital One Arena on Wednesday night. So the Wizards' three-game winning streak, what was their longest winning streak of this NBA regular season, now is over. Although Jordan Poole on Wednesday night had maybe his best game as a Wizard. Before we get to some feedback, some college basketball, VCU season is over. A 74-54 loss at Utah late night on Wednesday night in the quarterfinals of the NIT. But a double dose of good news for Maryland on Wednesday. First of all, Juju is coming back. Julian Reese, he on Wednesday afternoon announced that he is returning to the Terrapins for a fourth season with them. I am surprised by this. I'm happy about this, but I'm surprised by this. The feeling as the Terps' oh-so-disappointing season went on was that Reese was going to enter the NCAA transfer portal. The feeling was that he may be as good as gone, but he is coming back, so a pleasant surprise. And then we on Wednesday evening learned of a major transfer get for the Terps, Belmont guard Jacoby Gillespie, considered one of the best players available in the NCAA transfer portal this offseason. I don't want to get too excited with Maryland basketball, but Julian Reese is coming back. Now, two big transfer gets in Jacoby Gillespie and Rodney Rice, and don't forget, a big recruiting get in 6'10", Derek Queen. Perhaps things are looking up for the Terps. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Email from Steve Davis on a theme of this week. The Commanders seemingly having the rest of the NFL in the dark regarding what they're thinking with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft. Right, Steve, I love the Commanders' current way of doing business. Under Brucifer's leadership, the entire NFL would currently know who the team planned to draft in round one. The current administration is wise and savvy enough to keep its business strictly in-house, keeping everyone guessing, and by doing so, allowing the number two pick to be more valuable. The intrigue has all of the pundits and sports writers throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks, as Coach Gibbs used to say. The strict use of the cone of silence is refreshing and smart. Keep up your great work. Your podcast is the classiest Commanders news available. Well, thank you very much for that, Steve. I go back to this with Commanders General Manager Adam Peters. Yes, his most recent employer prior to the Commanders was the San Francisco 49ers. And yes, his employer prior to the Niners was the Denver Broncos. But keep in mind which NFL team was the first team to employ Peters as a member of the front office. The New England Patriots. Adam Peters worked in the scouting department of the Patriots for the 2003 through 2008 seasons. Adam Peters worked under the master of playing things close to the vest, now former Pats head coach Bill Belichick. And it is appropriate that Belichick comes up on this installment of the podcast because one of the more famous things that he ever said was, we're on to Cincinnati. And sure enough, the Nats on Thursday have their 2024 regular season opener at Cincinnati. So the Nats are on to Cincinnati.
We're on to Cincinnati.
Yes, we are on to Cincinnati. But Adam Peters' indoctrination into working in the NFL was under Bill Belichick. So it makes sense that Peters is Belichicking it with the Commanders' number two overall pick in the 2024 draft. Email from Andy Wagner on the Commanders trading quarterback Sam Howell to the Seattle Seahawks. Writes Andy, I love the new head coach and general manager and want to have confidence in their decisions, but I'm struggling to understand why they traded away Sam Howell. I was a Sam Howell fan and was glad to see him get a chance to start last season. He didn't prove that he was a top-end starter, but I think that he showed promise, and I could definitely have seen him starting this coming season again while our rookie quarterback watched and learned from the sidelines for half a season. Trading away Sam feels like we have to take a quarterback in round one versus the freedom to pick best player available. Sam is a top five backup in the NFL, and Marcus Mariota is a bottom half backup at best, right? If the quarterback who we draft isn't ready or gets hurt, are we really stuck with Mariota for the 2024 season? Please tell me that the new administration has thought this through. Howell is cheaper, younger, has a better arm, and is loved by the fan base. The team got good value for him, but won't the team regret trading him if it doesn't have a good backup? Thank you for the email, Andy. Well, I agree from a standpoint of I don't love that the Commanders traded Sam Howell. I would rather have Sam as the Commanders QB2 than have Marcus Mariota as the Commanders QB2. Mariota, all due respect, is a road to nowhere. He's a known entity. There's no true upside with Marcus Mariota. Sam has upside, even though, yes, his 2023 season cratered, okay? I mean, there's no debating that. I don't know if Sam is a top five backup quarterback in the NFL, but he could be. And I would not close the book on him potentially being a decent, if not good, starting quarterback in the NFL. And the scenario that I've thought about is, what if, God forbid, the quarterback who the Commanders take in the first round of the 2024 draft suffers a serious injury early in the 2024 season and has to miss substantial time? The team playing games with Marcus Mariota as the starting quarterback would feel pointless. Now, it is the NFL. Who knows? Maybe Mariota would go on a tear. But at least if Sam Howell was the QB2, there would be a feeling with the rookie QB1 having gone down of, okay, that's not good, but let's see where we are with Sam. Maybe he demonstrates real improvement from the 2023 season. What I come back to with Adam Peters just 2 months into his tenure trading Sam Howell is that Adam just is not a big believer in Sam. And we'll see if Adam is proven right. Well, you will be proven right by going with the best catering service in the DMV, Catering by Uptown. If you are planning a wedding, a party, a corporate event, whatever, get with Catering by Uptown. And Catering by Uptown, through the end of March, so not much time left here, is offering a special deal for listeners of the Al Galdi podcast. Newly engaged couples can get 5% off any Catering by Uptown wedding package. Visit cateringbyuptown.com, set up your own personal tour of one of Catering by Uptown's premier waterfront venues, and mention that Al Galdi sent you to get the discount. If you are planning a wedding, you want great service, but also a great price. Catering by Uptown provides both. Visit cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. Catering by Uptown is a family business. Great service, amazing cuisine, and reliability are the foundation of what makes Catering by Uptown one of the most referred caterers throughout Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Northern Virginia. Whether you are planning a wedding, a birthday, anniversary, or retirement celebration, a charity gala, whatever, put Catering by Uptown to work for you. Catering by Uptown understands that special events deserve to be celebrated in style. Catering by Uptown takes care of every detail so that you can enjoy your event. From putting together and executing a menu to picking linens to selecting an excellent florist, Catering by Uptown is committed to meeting your needs and exceeding your expectations. And don't forget about the great offer for listeners of the Al Galdi podcast. Newly engaged couples can get 5% off any Catering by Uptown wedding package. Just visit cateringbyuptown.com, set up your own personal tour of one of Catering by Uptown's premier waterfront venues, and mention that Al Galdi sent you to get the discount. That's cateringbyuptown.com, and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, please consider following the podcast if you're not already doing that. Following the podcast is free. Costs you nothing. If you have an iPhone, you can follow the podcast simply by tapping the plus sign in the upper right corner on the page listing the recent episodes of the podcast. This episode of the podcast is for Thursday, March 28th. 4 weeks away are we from the first round of the 2024 NFL Draft, in which our quarterback needy Commanders have the number 2 overall pick. We last Friday had Michigan's Pro Day, on which Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy was showcased. We on Wednesday had LSU's Pro Day, on which LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels was showcased. And we on Thursday have North Carolina's Pro Day, on which UNC quarterback Drake May will be showcased. We have spent so much time, and will continue to spend so much time, discussing and debating and analyzing Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy. But something that has come up quite a bit in the discussion of the perceived top quarterbacks in the 2024 draft is a certain advanced stat. And as you likely know, we on this podcast like to deal in the realm of advanced statistics. And the advanced stat to which I am referring is Pro Football Focus's pressure to sack rate. One of the more predictive stats for a quarterback regarding him taking sacks is PFF's pressure to sack rate, which is the percentage of a quarterback's pressure dropbacks that result in sacks. With pressure to sack rate, the lower the number, the better. And with pressure to sack rate, there is a lot of correlation between how a quarterback does in college and how he does in the NFL. Very few quarterbacks with bad collegiate pressure to sack rates have good NFL pressure to sack rates, and vice versa. Pressure to sack rate has become a big deal with Jaden Daniels. If you look at 116 quarterback prospects for the 2015 through 2023 college football season, so quarterback prospects for the 2016 through 2024 NFL drafts, Daniels has the 7th worst career pressure to sack rate out of those 116 quarterback prospects. Daniels' career pressure to sack rate, 24.5%. For comparison's sake, the career pressure to sack rate of now Seattle Seahawks quarterback Sam Howell in his collegiate career was 26.7. So Jaden Daniels 24.5, Sam Howell 26.7. And we this past season saw how telling that stat was with how often Sam as a Commanders quarterback got sacked. For much more on pressure to sack rate and what it says about Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy, I am very pleased to welcome to the Al Galdi podcast a man who has done a lot of research with pressure to sack rate, fantasy football writer Zachary Kruger of Roto World Football. You can follow Zachary on X at ZK_FFB. And Zachary on X has put up a lot of interesting posts about quarterbacks when viewed through this prism of pressure to sack rate. Hey, Zachary, how are you?
I'm doing great, Al. Thanks for having me on. Happy to talk about this. I'm hoping to one day get an article out about it. I've been busy with some other stuff, so when you offered me the opportunity to come on and talk about it, I was like, all right, this can kind of be the audio version of the article I hope to put out on, and hopefully can help some people better understand this and just kind of see what we're talking about when we mention pressure sack and it being a red flag for some of these incoming quarterback prospects.
Yeah, why is it that pressure to sack rate is such a reliable stat in terms of translating from a quarterback's collegiate career to his NFL career?
So that's a good question that I guess you could probably ask 10 different people and get 10 different answers. For me, I kind of just view it as what we're looking at with any sack is essentially a negative play. It's a loss of yards. Sometimes it's a loss of a lot of yards, and we know that a loss of yards sets an offense back. And if a player is consistently taking a high rate of sacks when pressured, pressures are something that you're going to inevitably see as a quarterback. You see, you know, hundreds of them every year, sometimes 200 plus when you're dropping back if your offensive line isn't particularly good. And just the fact that, you know, this is a stat that I think specifically highlights a quarterback's strength at avoiding sacks. And I'll mention that more in a second. But just the fact that it highlights a quarterback's strength at avoiding sacks when pressured, it kind of removes some of the impact that an offensive line could have on this. Because the offensive line, especially as we know with the Commanders, tends to shoulder a lot of the blame when it comes to this. And the idea is, you know, you get a better offensive line and all of a sudden this quarterback's sack issues are going to improve. And that's not always the case, as we saw with Sam Howell last year. Even as we saw with Justin Fields this past year, the Bears improved their offensive line some, and he still had a tremendous problem with pressure sack rate. So I think it's just kind of a way to paint a picture of a quarterback who has the tendency to take more negative plays than the average amount of his peers. And certainly you would... I you wouldn't want someone who's doing that. So I think that's why it seems to be predictive. And then we talk about the college to pro jump. Obviously, the difficulty of the game is only going to amplify those struggles. So if you're bad at it at college, it's hard to imagine you getting better at it in the pros.
So with Jaden Daniels, like I said, 7th worst career pressure to sack rate at a quarterback prospects for the 2016 through 2024 NFL drafts, 24.5. Now, his pressure to sack rate for just the 2023 season was better, 20.2. And looking at some current star quarterbacks in the NFL, there are some guys who have improved on their pressure to sack rates by multiple percentage points. The Los Angeles Chargers' Justin Herbert had a career collegiate pressure to sack rate of 18.2. His career NFL regular season pressure to sack rate is 14.5. The Philadelphia Eagles' Jalen Hurts had a career collegiate pressure to sack rate of 18. His career NFL regular season pressure to sack rate is 16.3. Given that Daniels this past season improved on his pressure to sack rate, is there legitimate hope that he will continue the improvement in the NFL, or are Herbert and Hurts more outliers than they are reasons for hope?
So the one thing that I was looking at, because outliers, you know, come up in this conversation, and people will ask, you know, kind of along the lines of what you're asking about, you know, something looks bad or something doesn't look as good and it gets better in the pros. What can we expect here? So the one thing that I kind of questioned when people were asking that, because I thought it was a fair question, was what does a player show at any point in time in his college career, right? Because one guy who is constantly talked about as an outlier is Lamar Jackson, because he just to go back just a hair, my opinion is that if a quarterback has a pressure sack rate for his career of 20% or higher, that's a red flag. And two of the biggest outliers people would often point out are Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow. Lamar Jackson is like 22.2%. Joe Burrow is a little bit higher than that, like 22% for his college career. Those are the two pretty obvious outliers when you look at all the stats. But then to get to your point of a player who improved on it in the pros or who maybe just looked better from college to the pros, I started to kind of ask the question, at any point in time in their college career, did they show good sack avoidance? Now, the one that stands out to me easily is Lamar Jackson. He has a 20.2% career pressure sack in college, but in 2015 and 2017, he had seasons where he had a pressure sack rate of 17.6 and 17.9%. The inflation that even got him to a career high or a career of 20.2% was a 24.9% sack rate in 2016, which was ironically his Heisman year. So I kind of tried to like parse out quarterbacks who maybe showed a good tendency of avoiding sacks at any point in their career. And to your point, Justin Herbert, if I just pull him up here for a second, a career 18.2% pressure sack rate at Oregon, that's outside the red flag area, at least it's below 20%. And then a career best in Oregon of 16.9% in one of his seasons there. So he's a player who showed to be able to kind of evade sacks at a rate that not only for his career consistently avoided that threshold, but then also had a 16.9% season in one of his years at Oregon, which I think is kind of an indicator that, you know, not only can he avoid sacks, but there could be a prone to improvement. I don't so much settle on the improvement from college to pros, just because we also know it can get worse. I'm more so looking to see if a player at any point in time ever showed a tendency to be able to avoid sacks at a rate that's not alarming. And Jaden Daniels, as you mentioned, 20.2% with his best, still kind of sits in that alarming factor right up there with Will Levis. Davis Mills, another name we know. Justin Fields never went below 20% in any season. Sam Howell's best is 22.9%. So we do see guys who not only do they have the career threshold, they're above that, but then they also never even hit that mark in a single season.
As you know, there is a tendency for mobile quarterbacks to have relatively high sack rates and relatively high pressure to sack rates because those quarterbacks do take what I call scramble sacks, i.e. sacks on which the quarterback was scrambling, buying time, and then got pushed out of bounds or tackled for a minimal yardage loss. Pressure to sack rate does not account for yardage lost on sacks, but especially with an ultra-mobile quarterback like Jaden Daniels, should we, when evaluating a quarterback through the prism of pressure to sack rate, consider yardage lost on sacks?
So in my opinion, some people were mentioning that and the yardage that Daniels can then make up for on the ground. My opinion is kind of why would we measure a quarterback like that, but then we don't measure a running back like that? Like a running back, if a running back is taking, you know, multiple rushes per game or you know, over the course of a season for even a 3 or 4 yard loss, that's another player that's keeping your offense off schedule. Regardless of how you get those yards back, ideally you don't ever want to be off schedule, because that's just more yards that you have to pick up to you know, keep the drive alive, reach the next first down. So I see the argument there with what he offers as a rusher, but I'm also kind of the opinion that any player who's taking, you know, negative plays in the backfield, I wouldn't change the expectation for a running back because maybe he catches passes, but is consistently getting tackled in the backfield on, you know, 20 or 30% of his rush attempts. So that's something that I guess you could look at, but the idea that a player would just be losing yardage at a higher rate than the average player just seems kind of like a bad fit to me overall.
Drilling deeper on Jaden Daniels' career pressure to sack rate of 24.5, it's even worse when you calculate his career pressure to sack rate without scrambles. Now, that is true of most, if not all, quarterbacks, but his rate really shoots up from 24.5 to 30.9. I mean, you said that 20 marks the red flag area, 30.9. What do you make of that?
That's kind of one that I just recently touched on within the last week or so. I think when that started to kind of bounce around was around the time you texted me. And my initial takeaway is, obviously, some of these players who are going to be doing a lot of scrambling, we know that's a strength. So I'm not trying to take away a strength, but again, it was a question that people were trying to kind of point out on Twitter, and he scrambles and you're not accounting for that. So I was like, all right, well, let's remove the scrambles away from pressure and sacks and just see if it gets any better. And not surprisingly, some players who are high-volume scramblers sit at the top because we know it's a strength. Hendon Hooker, Malik Willis, Jaden Daniels, those are your top three. And then not too far below them, Justin Fields. Lamar Jackson, obviously, in there as well at 24.1%. But again, that's, you know, removing one of their strengths and still seeing it. I'm just kind of the opinion that, you know, that's probably just a case of maybe trying to do too much. We saw Caleb Williams actually have a high pressure sack rate this past season at USC, coming off of a Heisman winning season, a player who was obviously very comfortable in the pocket. He showed that his first 2 years with very strong pressure sack rates in his first year at Oklahoma and then also his first year at USC in his sophomore season. Sometimes I wonder if players who are skilled at avoiding these sacks can still see increased pressure sack rates where they're just trying to do too much because they know their abilities, they know what they've gotten away with in the past before, and it sometimes doesn't work out, or if it's just a case of trying to do too much. I don't have a definite answer on that, but we see some players with good pressure sack rates for their career that when they're not breaking away and scrambling, obviously they increase. And some of these guys who we know are solid at that, the fact that they do take that dip, it does just kind of make me wonder if it's more of a mental thing of trying to do too much and it's just not working out. And that's why we see those numbers spike up.
Bottom line, should Jaden Daniels' pressure to sack rate numbers be disqualifying for the Commanders taking him with the number 2 overall pick in the 2024 draft?
So that's kind of another thing that Jaden Daniels was a player who early on in the draft process I really wanted to like. Ironically, Jay McCarthy was the one I thought I was going to be out on. Now that's kind of flipped, and I have Jaden Daniels as my quarterback 4 of the class right now, with it being Williams and then McCarthy and Mayer kind of neck and neck. I have McCarthy slightly ahead of Mayer right now, and then I have Daniels 4th. So my opinion on Jaden Daniels at this point in time is kind of we know what the strengths are. We know what the weaknesses are. I think he comps very similarly to Justin Fields, both in some of the passing stats that we saw from an accuracy perspective. We know he can scramble. We also know that both players had a high pressure sack rate in their college career, and we've seen that obviously carry over with Fields. One thing I looked back at with Justin Fields before he hopped on the show is I wanted to look at his designed rush attempts by year as a pro in his 3 years with the Bears, because my opinion is kind of, we know some of Daniels' weaknesses. We know these sack numbers are here. I think that whichever team takes Daniels would be wise to alleviate some of these sack-taking opportunities by simply calling more design runs with him, which we know is a strength. Justin Fields, in his first season with the Bears, only 37.5% of his runs that season came on design runs. In 2022, when a lot of people argued he made that leap a little bit and had like close to, you know, 1,100 rush yards or whatever it was, he had 56% of his runs on design runs. And then even in 2023, 65.6% of his runs came on design runs. And the argument for Fields has kind of been, even though he hasn't quite lived up to the expectations of the first round draft capital that he received, a lot of people argue, well, he's kind of shown progress year over year. He's gotten better. Now the Bears have the number one overall pick. They're probably going to take Caleb Williams. But that argument of Fields getting better seems to be directly correlated to an increase in design runs, which I think is probably the best case scenario for Jaden Daniels. Like, let's get him in an offense that can utilize his strengths, can utilize his legs, not put him in a position where he doesn't have to take a lot of those negative plays, and maybe find a way that both can balance out and there can be success had for him as a pro wherever he lands. So trying not to shoehorn him in a traditional offense and really making sure you capitalize on his ability as a runner and call those design runs, I think would be vital to his success as a pro.
Yeah, and then you get into Jaden Daniels' running style, which includes him being reckless at times, and he is thin, so you worry about him getting injured. There is a lot to like with Jaden Daniels, but there certainly are concerns. Much more with Zachary Kruger in moments, but if you enjoy this podcast, check out BGO Blind Pig, the official podcast of BGObsession.com. BGO Blind Pig is a roundtable discussion of all things Washington Commanders football. Lots of good and passionate Commanders conversation from Commanders fans who know the team well. You can find the BGO Blind Pig podcast on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, or on any major podcast provider. Make BGObsession.com the home for your burgundy and gold obsession, and make the BGO Blind Pig podcast one of your weekly DC football listens. We're talking with fantasy football writer Zachary Kruger of Roto World Football about Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and JJ McCarthy, especially when examined via a very instructive advanced stat, Pro Football Focus's pressure to sack rate. Looking at Drake May and JJ McCarthy, May's career pressure to sack rate is 18.9, McCarthy's is 14.3. What do those guys' career pressure to sack rates say to you?
So JD McCarthy, just for starters, very, very good pressure sack rate. Amongst 109 prospects, when I just looked at strictly pressure sack rate, he ranks 27th in pressure sack rate with 14.3%. Obviously, that's not just good company. That's very, very good company. Let me just pull up a couple names that would stand out within that range real quick here. But with 14.3%, we see other guys... pardon me for doing this, but we see Jared Goff, he's within that range. We know he's had a okay career for himself after going to Detroit. We see Trevor Lawrence at 15%. We got Josh Allen at 16%. And then even guys like Tua Tagovailoa, Deshaun Watson, CJ Stroud, all guys, Jordan Love, all guys who are actually even below 14%. So a lot of guys kind of within that range, and that's really a range that I like to see. If you get below 15% pressure sack rate for your college career, there's a lot of names that really start to pop off. And then obviously when it comes to McCarthy, even some of the other advanced metrics that you can get into with him, which I've kind of preferred to do a lot over this process because the criticism of him is not enough volume. So breaking him down on a play-by-play basis on a lot of percentage-based numbers, I think kind of paint a better picture of what he is and maybe what people are stereotyping him as far as a player goes who didn't see nearly the pass attempts that guys like Drake May or Jaden Daniels did. So the pressure to sack rate below 15% is an excellent range. His adjusted completion percentage is 74.2%. Another stat that we think is certainly important is accuracy. That's 18th out of 109 prospects since 2016. So just as the pressure to sack and the adjusted completion percentage really stand out as a guy who you at least hope can be at a level where he's a good prospect based on where he's rumored to go right now, especially with his name now popping up at number two to Washington. Drake May, real quick, 18.9% pressure sack rate. He's kind of in that Justin Herbert range of not being completely alarming, but also you would like it to be better. We can live with that. Justin completion percentage of 73.1%. That's 34th out of 109 prospects. Also a very high ADOT and a good ADOT on completed passes as well, of 11.0 overall and then 8.1 ADOT on completions. Both of those are inside the top 25 of the 109 prospects. So certainly neither of them have the alarming pressure sack rate that we see with Jaden Daniels. And then the accuracy, which is there with Daniels, is also there with these prospects. And both have also a higher ADOT than Daniels does for his career as well.
And I'm sure that many people listening know what ADOT is, but in case that you don't, ADOT is an advanced stat, stands for average depth of Target. A good friend of this podcast, you may know him, Pro Football Focus senior data analyst and Commanders fan, Nick Ackridge. He had a post on X on March 19th, conducted an interesting exercise. He looked at the pressure to sack rates of Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and JJ McCarthy over the last two seasons in two ways. Way number one on first and second downs, way number two on third downs. Mays and Daniels' pressure to sack rates on third downs were worse than those guys' pressure to sack rates on first and second downs. But McCarthy's pressure to sack rate on third downs actually was better than his pressure to sack rate on first and second downs. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, to me, and this has kind of come up in the pre-draft process. You read a lot about, you hear a lot about. Coaches and scouts alike are both very impressed with JJ McCarthy's football IQ. To me, some of that pressure sack rate stuff being within, you know, the range for his career, or even as you point out here, better. To me, that just kind of spells, you know, a guy who can find a way, regardless of down or distance, where maybe some other players struggle to do so. I did look back just for the last four NFL seasons since 2020, because this question of downs came up. That you may have seen the Joe Burrow video where he was like, oh, like taking a sack on third down's not a big deal. And it kind of painted the picture, I think, to a lot of people that Joe Burrow was just out here not taking sacks on first and second down, and that all these sacks that are so concerned with Joe Burrow were happening on like third and fourth down when he's kind of treating it as a do or die moment on the drive. Joe Burrow's sack rate does get, or pressure sack rate does get worse over the course of his NFL career on third and fourth downs, but by the same token, his early down pressure sack rate isn't good either. So it's kind of like, I see your point, but also you still struggle on first and second down. So a lot of these players, if you look back at the numbers, they do tend to have that decline on third and fourth down. I did see plenty where they also got better or stayed around the same. I didn't particularly look into if there's any distinguishing difference between players who are good at avoiding sacks regardless, and then I didn't break it down specifically on that level, but a lot of times you still saw just on third and fourth down players who were good at avoiding sacks, not good at avoiding sacks, tended to kind of trend the same way. So McCarthy, to me, the fact that you said that, I hadn't seen that before, that's not really that surprising, because a 14.3% career percent is just, I mean, that's really good. Again, 27th out of 109 prospects, it's kind of hard to argue against that. So the fact that he was able to kind of display that at a high level, even on third downs like that, I think that's good and not surprising. He really just kind of triggers or stands out to me as a guy who just finds a way to get through these third down conversions and make things happen.
You said that you have Jaden Daniels as your QB4 in the 2024 draft. You have USC's Caleb Williams as your QB1. Who do you have as your QB2, Drake May or JJ McCarthy?
I go back and forth on this one. So May is my quarterback too, is probably like me holding to my priors a little bit, and then also being more down on McCarthy heading into this process. I have McCarthy ahead of May by a slim margin right now, and that's really just because some of the numbers that you see from, again, the advanced analytics and the stuff that I like and that I'm kind of honing in on. He stands out in some of those. But then another thing that really stands out to me with Drake May, which you almost can't get away from, if big-time throws are something that you value in football, which I think we all like big-time plays, Drake May was insane for his 2 years as a starter at North Carolina. Third overall in big-time throw rate at 7.9%. J.J. McCarthy's 5.8%. Jaden Daniels, 4.3%. That is from another separate database. I have 75 prospects since 2020. So 59th for Daniels out of 75. May, third in big-time throw rate of 75, 7.9%. And then McCarthy, 5.8%, 27th out of 75 prospects for what I pulled for that. So May's big-time throw rate, coupled with the fact that people just talk about what he was able to do despite the lack of talent around him, particularly last year, it really does kind of stand out to me. And with the fact that he doesn't have too many other red flags as far as like the sack problems go, it's kind of what makes me wonder, can I keep him at my number two, or can I settle on McCarthy at number two and be comfortable with that? And it's neck and neck with me, but I just have McCarthy as a slight edge right now.
Final question, as we all try to figure out which quarterback the Commanders should take via their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft, what is a quarterback stat other than pressure to sack rate that reliably translates from college football to the NFL?
Not that I've particularly looked at, and recently now some guys who I've talked to have said that accuracy tends to be the one that is you know, the other one that you really want to look at there. So accuracy, I would say, is probably up there with pressure sack rate. For me, they're kind of like one and two. They're kind of like Drake May and J.J. McCarthy. They're like probably neck and neck, one and two. Accuracy is something that I think, you know, tends to carry over just based on some conversations and some brief looks I've taken into it, especially adjusted completion percentage, which I tend to value a little bit more than just overall completion percentage, because it factors out uncontrollable factors for the quarterback, like drops and things like that. And you see a lot of quarterbacks whose names we like and know at the NFL level who have high adjusted completion percentages for college. Just real quick, Baker Mayfield's at the top here. Bryce Young, not a great rookie year, but nevertheless, number one overall pick, high adjusted completion percentage. Tua Tagovailoa, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Justin Fields, all guys who were drafted high. Even C.J. Stroud, 15th overall in adjusted completion percentage of quarterbacks taken since 2016. So there are a lot of names that are high up there with adjusted completion percentage that I think at least can kind of draw a nice correlation between the two of college to pro success. One stat that I had found, I need to go back and find the actual tweet, but if I'm shooting off the top of my head here, I looked at completion percentage average depth, or completion average depth of target on completion of 8.0 or higher, adjusted completion percentage of 70% or higher, and then a pressure to sack rate below 20%. I'll send you the tweets you can post if you'd like to. But of the 109 prospects who I looked at when filtering for just those three specific categories, the ones who met or exceeded those was C.J. Stroud, Kyler Murray, and Drake May, which was a good number, because the completed A dot was something I've kind of been messing around with just to see when quarterbacks are actually completing their passes, how far down the field are they doing it on average. One thing that I found recently is that ADOT on incompletions drastically inflates overall ADOT. So I was trying to find a way to maybe see if we can paint a better picture of players who are completing passes downfield and what they're doing with that. C.J. Stroud saw a very nice jump in that, but maybe that's a conversation for another day. But adjusted completion percentage and pressure sack rate, I would say, are kind of the two that I would view as very, very good predictive measurements to at least start with and then kind of go from there.
Adjusted completion percentage, advanced stat from Pro Football Focus, is an advanced version of completion percentage in that the stat accounts for drop passes and passes thrown away and spiked balls and passes batted at a line of scrimmage and passes on which a quarterback was hit as he threw. Really interesting stat to look at. Tremendous stuff. Fantasy football writer Zachary Kruger of Roto World Football. Zachary, thank you and all the best to you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm happy to come on again.
All right, Zachary Kruger bringing us knowledge, bringing us data. He came to that conversation prepared. I like that. And I also like at WSH on the Daily on Instagram. If you are a Commanders fan like me, make sure that you're checking in on at WSH on the Daily. WSH on the Daily just started in 2021 and yet has well over 26,000 followers. The page is growing at a rapid rate, and the page is what its title suggests, daily. The page is updated every day. News, notes, reports, photos, graphics. WSH on the Daily is a page that properly sources and vets its news and information, doesn't just post anything that anyone says. WSH on the Daily responds to every single DM. WSH on the Daily is a page at which you can have fun, including a great jersey giveaway that's going on right now to enter. All that you have to do is go to the page and read the pinned post. And WSH on the Daily always has a great fresh look. If you are on Instagram, check out at WSH on the Daily and check out at WSH on the Daily's online shop, WSHonthedaily.com. Some outstanding gear, shirts, hoodies, excellent material, modern looks. So for smart, informative, fun, and engaging Commanders content, check out at WSH on the Daily on Instagram. And for great merch, visit WSHonthedaily.com.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Nationals on Thursday afternoon begin their 2024 regular season. That's at the Cincinnati Reds Thursday afternoon at 4:10 for game one of a three-game series. Josiah Gray will be the Nats starting pitcher. Believe it or not, the Nats 2024 season marks their 20th season in Washington, D.C., 2005 through 2024, 20 seasons. There was a time in which D.C. having a major league team, again, felt like a pie-in-the-sky dream. No major league team for D.C. for the 1972 through 2004 seasons, but here we are now, season number 20 of the Nats in D.C. It's great to be able to say that. The Nats 2024 season, to me, is a big season in their rebuild. The rebuild started in the middle of the 2021 season, so the 2024 season is season number 4 of the Nats rebuild. It's not exactly clear whether their rebuild is working. There are reasons to say yes. There are reasons to say not so fast. But I do believe that we, by the end of the Nats 2024 season, will have a lot more clarity on whether the rebuild is working. And I believe that because the Nats 2024 season, if it goes as planned, will include the Major League regular season debuts of the team's top three prospects, outfielders Dylan Cruz and James Wood and third baseman Brady House, and will include the continued growth of promising young players already at the Major League level. Starting pitchers Josiah Gray, Mackenzie Gore, and Jake Irvin, shortstop CJ Abrams, and catcher K-Baird Ruiz. There are other people who I could mention, but those eight players, as things stand right now, are pillars in this Nats rebuild. If those guys, or at least most of those guys, have good slash encouraging seasons, then we are going to be feeling quite good about this Nats rebuild by the end of the team's 2024 season. But if those guys, or at least most of those guys, do not have good slash encouraging seasons, then we are going to have a lot of questions about how this Nats rebuild is going. One of the things about rebuilds in modern MLB is that when they work, you know that they work. You don't have to wonder if they're working. You know that they're working because what often happens in a rebuild that works is that the team has a breakout season a year or two sooner than anticipated. The 2022 Orioles are an example of this. The 2015 Chicago Cubs are an example of this. Heck, the 2012 Nats are an example of this. The Nats went from six consecutive losing regular seasons, 2006 through 2011, to in the 2012 regular season winning 98 games and running away with the National League East title. My hope for the Nats is that their 2024 season is like the Orioles' 2022 season. Not necessarily a playoff season, but a breakout season, a bust-out season. The O's in the 2021 regular season were horrendous. They went a Major League Worst tying 52-110 with a Major League Worst run differential of -297. But the O's in the 2022 regular season went 83-79. Didn't make the playoffs, but massive improvement. My prediction for the Nats in the 2024 regular season is them going 82-80. Yes, a winning record. What would be their first winning record for a regular season since their 2019 World Series championship season? This is an odd time for the Nats because there are major big picture questions. How committed are the Lerners as owners? Yes, they're no longer exploring selling the team, but does that mean that they are all in on owning the team? And if a great offer for the team did come along, would they truly not sell the team? Also, the Nats last year did something that you rarely see. They revamped their front office, but kept the head of the front office. And they did all of this during a rebuild that they say is working. This is so rare, but the Nats did this. The Nats, last September 13th, officially announced having agreed with President of Baseball Operations and General Manager Mike Rizzo on, quote, a multi-year contract extension, end quote. But that happened as the Nats last September, October, and November engineered all kinds of change in the front office beneath Mike Rizzo. If the rebuild is going so well, why was this change enacted? To say nothing of what remains my biggest question with the Nats, are they going to get back to drafting well and developing players well? Because the team has not done those things well for way too long. So there are major big picture questions with the Nats. But the team has promising young talent. MLB Pipeline on January 26 put out the outlet's latest list of the top 100 prospects in baseball. The Nats had three top 100 prospects, but they were all within the top 48. Dylan Cruz was number 7. James Wood was number 14. Brady House was number 48. If the Nats hit on at least two of those guys, to say nothing of all three, and if the Nats get continued growth from those promising young players already at the major league level, the 2024 season could be a very fun season for the Nats. They per Baseball Prospectus's PECOTA projections are being forecasted for just 58 wins in the 2024 regular season. That to me is way too low. I have big picture questions with the Nats, but I do think that there's reason for optimism. And when it comes to optimism for the Orioles 2024 regular season, well, I have never been more pumped for an Orioles season than I am for this one, especially with what happened on Wednesday. MLB owners on Wednesday, one day before 2024 opening day, unanimously approved the sale of the Orioles from the Angelos family to the group led by private equity billionaire David Rubenstein. The sale is complete. The sale is done. What seemed like a dream not long ago, the Angelos family selling the O's, now has happened. David Rubenstein on X on Wednesday afternoon posted the following video.
Hello, I'm David Rubenstein, and I'm pleased to be the new owner of the Baltimore Orioles. I'm excited because I'm a native of Baltimore, have been a lifelong fan of the Orioles, and I'm really looking forward to doing what we can together with the community to make the Orioles the best team in baseball. I want to thank the Angelos family for what they've done over the last 30 years to provide stewardship of the Orioles. The owner of any baseball team can only do so much. Everything depends on the fans. So I hope you will come to games, support the team, and do everything we can to bring us to the next chapter of the Baltimore Orioles, and hopefully that will lead us to another World Series championship in the very near future.
Hear, hear. Peter Angelos, of course, just died. He on Saturday died at the age of 94. So I don't want to go off on how bad of a run the Angelos family had in owning the O's, but the run was bad. And it feels like things under David Rubenstein are going to be so much better. You know, he's already talking about settling the Masson dispute with the Nationals. Rubenstein said the following to the Baltimore Sun for a piece that came out on Tuesday. Quote, I am working on it. I just think it's premature to say what the resolution will be, but my goal is to take this away from the lawyers and give it back to the business people to resolve. So I'm hopeful and I have reason to believe that I can get this done, but I'm not a miracle worker. It's been going on for a long time, but I think the commissioner of baseball would like to get this resolved. I think all the owners would like to get this resolved, and I would like to get it resolved, but I don't have an easy answer yet. If it was easy, it would have been resolved, of course. But I think it's something I'm really focused on, and I think I have reason to believe that we can get something done, end quote. We shall see what comes of the never-ending Masson dispute. But the fact that this guy is even talking about the never-ending Masson dispute actually potentially ending is great. There's also this, catching the ceremonial first pitch for the Orioles 2024 regular season opener, home to the Los Angeles Angels on Thursday afternoon at 3:05 for game one of a three-game series, is the Iron Man, perhaps the greatest player in Orioles history. National Baseball Hall of Fame shortstop / third baseman Cal Ripken Jr., who inexcusably had been, like, estranged from the O's for years. Well, not no more. David Rubenstein is making it a point to have Cal Ripken Jr. more involved. That is great news, and I cannot wait to hear the ovation that Cal gets at Oriole Park at Camden Yards on Thursday afternoon. I don't assume anything with the Orioles 2024 regular season, because as we know in sports, it is when things seemingly cannot go wrong that they do go wrong. But take a step back and examine the O's. They are beginning their 2024 regular season with much-needed new ownership. Maybe the smartest front office in MLB, a front office led by Executive Vice President and General Manager Mike Elias. The reigning American League Manager of the Year in Brandon Hyde. The reigning American League Rookie of the Year in infielder Gunnar Henderson. So many other promising young players at the major league level. A certified ace in Corbin Burnes, who is the Orioles starting pitcher for their 2024 regular season opener, and so many high-level prospects. MLB Pipeline on January 26th and putting out the outlet's latest list of the top 100 prospects in baseball had six Orioles top 100 prospects, and in fact, they were all within the top 63 and leading the way. The consensus number one prospect in baseball, shortstop / second baseman, Jackson Holliday. Are there concerns for the O's? Sure. Two key starting pitchers, Kyle Bradish and John Means, are not ready for the start of the 2024 regular season. Bradish is dealing with an ulnar collateral ligament sprain in his right elbow. Means is behind other pitchers due to having experienced left elbow soreness late last regular season. Means underwent Tommy John surgery on his left elbow on April 27th, 2022. But bottom line, there is major reason for optimism, for positive vibes, if you are an Orioles fan right now. The O's in the 2023 regular season went an American League best 101-61. Now, yes, they, in their American League Division Series, got swept in three games by the Texas Rangers, although the Rangers did go on to win the 2023 World Series. The O's per Baseball Prospectus's Pecota projections are being forecasted for 87 wins in the 2024 regular season. Pecota is almost always low on the O's. I'll take the O's to go 92-70 in the 2024 regular season. The team last regular season did overachieve in terms of actual record versus run differential. And this Kyle Bradish situation is concerning. He was their ace last season. Who knows when or even if he'll pitch in the 2024 regular season. What he's dealing with can be a precursor to needing Tommy John surgery. But for the first time in a long time, it is basically impossible not to be bullish on the O's. Well, the Wizards on Wednesday night begin a stretch of six consecutive home games. This is part of a stretch of 10 home games in 11 games. A lot of games at Capital One Arena are coming up. Appropriate, given the news on Wednesday evening that the Wizards and the Capitals are remaining with Capital One Arena as the team's arena for home games until 2050. But the Wizards on Wednesday night did lose. So their three-game winning streak, what was their longest winning streak of this NBA regular season, now is over. A 122-119 overtime loss to the Brooklyn Nets at Capital One Arena on Wednesday night. The Wizards for this regular season now are 14-59, second worst record in the NBA. But this was a competitive competitive loss for our tanking and rebuilding Wizards. They overcame a 10-point second quarter deficit. Two things did in the Wizards, defense and offensive rebounding. The Wizards' defense wasn't awful. They did hold the Nets to just a 10 of 33 on threes, but the Wizards allowed the Nets to score 56 points in the paint as the Nets went 28 of 49 in the paint. And the Wizards generated just 8 Nets turnovers the entire game. And the Wizards got worked by Cam Thomas. He, in 45 minutes, 8 seconds as a starter, had 38 points, 7 assists versus 2 turnovers and 2 rebounds. He went 2 of 6 on threes, 12 of 21 on twos, and 8 of 8 on free throws. Also, the Wizards had just 5 offensive rebounds to the Nets' 10, and thus just 6 second chance points to the Nets' 16. But the Wizards shot well from the field. They went 14 of 34 on threes and 32 of 57 on twos. A monster game for Jordan Poole. You know, Jordan Poole has been better lately. The improvement started when he started coming off the bench. He lately has been back to starting due to Tyus Jones being out. Poole has been playing a lot of point guard, and he has been better. Not great, but better. Although he on Wednesday night was great. Poole in 44 minutes, 30 seconds as a starter went 5 of 12 on threes, 10 of 12 on twos, and 3 of 3 on free throws. He finished with 38 points, 8 assists versus 4 turnovers, and 7 rebounds. A tremendous game. Here was Wizards interim head coach Brian Keefe during his post-game press conference on Wednesday night on Jordan Poole.
You know, obviously he's been great. This has been, you know, something that we thought we envisioned when we gave the put the ball in his hands. We have complete trust in him to make decisions for himself and for his teammates. And obviously he had a big scoring night. But he's been playing very well since we've initiated him more with to initiate the offense. And this is how the style we want him to play, be aggressive for himself, but also for his teammates. He draws a huge crowd, and that frees up his other guys.
And also really good for the Wizards on Wednesday night was Kyle Kuzma. He returned from a one-game absence caused by left shoulder soreness. Kuzma, in 43 minutes, 34 seconds as a starter, went 3 of 4 on threes, 7 of 15 on twos, and 1 of 2 on free throws. He finished with 24 points, 10 assists versus no turnovers, and 6 rebounds. Denny Avdija returned from a one-game absence caused by a non-COVID illness. He, in 37 minutes, 49 seconds as a starter, went 1 of 3 on threes, 4 of 7 on twos, and 6 of 8 on free throws. He finished with 17 points, 12 rebounds, and 3 assists versus 2 turnovers. Another very efficient game for Marvin Bagley III, 24 minutes, 50 seconds as a reserve. He went 2 of 2 on threes, 5 of 8 on twos, and 2 of 2 on free throws. He finished with 18 points and 6 rebounds. So the Wizards did remain without multiple key players. I mentioned Kyle Kuzma and Denny Avdija being back, but Rashawn Holmes left the game due to a left toe contusion. The aforementioned Tyus Jones did not play for a 7th consecutive game due to a back injury. Landry Shamet did not play for a 9th consecutive game due to a left calf strain. Eugene Omoruyi did not play for a 5th consecutive game due to a sprained right ankle. And remaining done for the season are Bilal Coulibaly due to a right wrist fracture and Isaiah Livers due to a right hip ailment. Next up for the Wizards are 2 games this weekend. Home to the NBA worst Detroit Pistons Friday night at 7, and home to the Miami Heat Sunday evening at 6. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Friday show, episode 794. We'll have much more on the Commanders. Also on Friday's show, I'll talk Capitals, Nationals, and Orioles. The Caps are at the Toronto Maple Leafs Thursday night at 7, and the Nats and Does have their 2024 regular season openers on Thursday afternoon. The Nats are at the Cincinnati Reds Thursday afternoon at 4:10. The O's are home to the Los Angeles Angels Thursday afternoon at 3:05. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and I'll talk to you on Friday.
We're on to Cincinnati.